You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to another episode of Solana Moms Building Community Podcast and Tomorrow's Table Podcast. We're so glad you're here with us today, whether you're tuning in while driving, getting things done at home, or taking a moment for yourself. Today, we're honored to welcome Andrea Source, Mayor of Vallejo, to the podcast. Mayor Source has devoted her life to public service and as a community college economics professor and public policy expert, she brings deep knowledge, compassion, and accountability to her role as Mayor of Vallejo. She's committed to putting people first and delivering leadership that's honest, inclusive, and fiscally responsible. In this conversation, we will dive into her vision for Vallejo, how she balances family and leadership, and how her work impacts youth and families in our community.
Welcome back to Tomorrow's Table Podcast. I'm your host, Pokum Tianpit, and I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm your co-host, Miriam Trump from Solana Moms Building Community. How was your drive?
It was good. I just kind of had a hard time finding the building, but someone helped me downstairs.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't have a hard time, but I was here at 12 o'clock. I was sitting in my car the whole time. I'm like, what am I supposed to do?
I know, when you text me, I was like, she got there so early.
Well, I was so excited to interview her. I mean, I have been wanting to interview her since I talked to Miss Cassandra James, and finally she said yes. So I was like, I'm going to be there an hour early.
Oh my gosh. So we're here in front of Mayor Source. Welcome. It's such an honor to be able to interview you today and finally be able to meet you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's great to meet you both as well.
Yes, you too. Thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy. You know how I know you're busy? This is going to sound like really weird, but every time I go to your Instagram, you're doing events and events and events. How do you keep up with that?
It's a lot, but I'm really enjoying it. You know, I think there's a balance between the really hard work we have to do at City Hall and then going out in community and celebrating and having the fun. So I try to strike a balance and make sure that I'm out in community at events, you know, celebrating all the good about Vallejo.
I think that's the most powerful thing, what I see about you and Ms. Cassandra James. Like I said, I interviewed. You're always there in the field. Mm-hmm. So I remember when my dad raised me, he was a general. He said a general needs to be in the field to help his soldiers. And that's how he will know what's needed in the field. And when I literally see you too, I feel that because you're there with the community. You're seeing what their needs are. You're not behind a desk making decisions. You're with them and you're making the decisions.
Yeah, that's the goal. I agree completely. I think it's so important.
I love how you're so hands-on with the community.
Yeah.
And that's where you're highly respected.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That was one of the goals in running for office, was trying to bring the government a little bit closer to the community and also build power in the community and make people really feel like they're included and that their voice is heard.
Yeah, I think most positive impact comes within the community having it than just telling the community what to do.
Exactly.
We have some questions for you. Yeah. Mayor Source, again, congratulations on your election.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
What inspired you to run for mayor, and how has your vision for Vallejo evolved since taking office?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is not something that was on my you know, bingo card or a life ambition of mine, but I've spent my whole career in public service, starting out in education, and then I served in the Peace Corps and worked with refugees and immigrants, and now I teach at a community college. And I think having moved around a lot throughout my life, when we landed in Vallejo, I really wanted to get involved and make a difference, and ended up through a few different volunteer opportunities, but ended up being one of the co-founders of the Solano County ACLU chapter, started getting involved, coming to city council meetings, and I was just seeing a government that I didn't feel was responsive to the needs of the people. And I think with my background in public service and public administration, I have a really strong belief that government can and should work for the people. I really do believe in the power and the role of government. And so I was seeing in Vallejo a government that wasn't functioning. And it was a slow build. Over many years, it just sort of became clear that the best path for me to try to push for the change I wanted to see was to run for office, and was to run specifically for mayor, to try and bring in a new wave of leadership to fundamentally change the way that we do business in the city.
I love how you have that vision and then you went for it.
Yeah. And it was, I was definitely reluctant. People were kind of asking me, why don't you run? And I'm so glad that I did. And I think, you know, from the kickoff, it was clear that the community really wanted change. They really wanted something different than the same old kind of special interest people behind closed doors, as you were saying earlier. You know, there was just a desire to see some new folks and more community-centered folks in leadership. The second part of the question, the vision evolving since I took office, I think there's really been the need for me. I don't have enough hours in the day to do everything, so it's been a real lesson in prioritization. But I think for me, I've been really trying to focus on the systems thinking. How do we build community? How do we build power? How do we make our government function more for people and be more transparent and ultimately effective at delivering public services? So I've been really focused on using my role as mayor to try and put those systems in place so that we can function irrespective of any different issue, that we have, you know, systems that are working. And then at the same time, I'm working to build relationships regionally with different partners, other elected officials, and, you know, our state and federal representatives to make sure we're bringing resources to Vallejo. And then the third, obviously, is getting out into community and finding ways to really connect with folks, connect with young people especially. I've been going out to high schools, trying to go out to community events and just change the perspective, stereotype image of kind of what a politician does in this city. That I'm not the one that's always just holding the scissors at a ribbon cutting or standing behind the podium or, you know, giving a keynote, but I'm out there. I'm out there with folks. I'm accessible. People will know who I am. And I think it's that three piece, that vision for the city is, okay, we need to do the work to make sure the city functions. We need to make sure we're projecting strength and partnership regionally. And we need to be empowering our community and be out in community and kind of setting the right.
Being out in the community, raising more awareness for sure. You mentioned a little bit about your nonprofit or your organization that you were the founder of, ACLU. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the ACLU is a national organization, the American Civil Liberties Union. And one of the things that had been happening in Vallejo with the police accountability issue was that, you know, the impacted families and impacted folks really weren't feeling like they were getting justice, and there were civil rights issues. And so the ACLU nationally, they do work on First Amendment protections and really just civil rights and civil liberties, and they have a local program where they have local offices. So there's the Northern California region, and then they had set up a program where you could start county-based chapters. And so the goal with starting the county-based chapter was really to get the eyes on Solano County. The ACLU had been focusing on police accountability issues, but they had been looking at cases in San Francisco and cases in Sacramento and cases in the East Bay, and they hadn't really given the time of day to Vallejo or to Solano County. And so the goal with starting the chapter was to build the momentum to try to bring those supports in and those resources in.
Wow.
That's impressive. And you saw the need for that, and you brought it. I think earlier, I want to mention when you were talking, it's so important that you said you're connecting with people, because what people a lot of times see is a politician as the untouchable. I've said this in my previous podcast, and you're connecting yourself with the people and saying, I'm one of you. I live here. I'm here to have a better community for you and for me. And that's impressive. And I admire that as a politician, even when I was younger, or when you're in a community, you're like, I don't know if they see what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it and you're on the field, like I said.
Exactly. And I think once you talk to enough people and you get a sense of where our ethos is and what our values are as a community, it makes you feel more confident in a decision or in standing up for something, going, no, I know, I've talked to people, I know that this is where the heart of our community is at.
And she's out there. She knows exactly what the community needs.
And she's what's the needs.
Yeah. That's very hands-on.
Yes.
Thank you.
You have emphasized the importance of being a culture carrier in the city leadership. How are you working to shift the culture within Vallejo's government?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. And that's one of the reasons why I ran for mayor and not city council, because the mayor is the sort of ceremonial head of the city and does have a lot of soft power with respect to culture. You can't do it all alone. And that's been very difficult. But from my perspective, I've kind of focused on three things. I want to make sure, first of all, that we're being honest. So we're not lying, but we're not, you know, there's no deceit, there's no deception, that we're being honest and open about the challenges that we face. And we're doing it with public safety, really talking honestly about the issues of shootings and issues of understaffing and issues of police accountability, and then using that to inform potential solutions with homelessness, you know, that we're being honest about mismanagement of previous projects and the consequences that that has meant for our community and for our unhoused, and using that to move forward. So just trying to model that honesty and integrity. The second piece is, I've been very clear that I don't want to hear excuses and I don't want to make excuses. And I think the city has a history of just kind of making excuses and going, well, we can't do that, and then it's all over. And I've been very deliberate, even just in interactions I have with community members, to make sure that I'm not making excuses. Even if there's something that I really don't have control over, that I'm really giving the information and talking about what the way forward is, and we're not dismissing concerns. And then the third piece is the need for unity. The division is a really big issue in the city that I think we've always just sort of been pitted against each other, with people on one side and the other side just kind of yelling at each other. And we have to be able, we're such a beautiful, diverse community with amazing people and amazing insights, and our disagreements are a strength. We shouldn't agree on everything, but we've got to be able to be in spaces where we can disagree with each other respectfully and have discourse and come together. So it's, you know, if we can start being honest about the problems we face, not make excuses, but really look forward, and then do it in a way that is not going to divide us, but is going to unite us, even if we disagree. That's the culture that I want to model. And that's
unity.
The
word is unity.
It's unity, and it's not unity in you're either with us or against us. It's
okay to have a disagreement,
exactly,
but let's do it in a professional way.
Exactly. It's okay. It's unity in we're Vallejo. We shouldn't all agree on everything. We have so much, the diversity in this community, it's more than the racial and ethnic. And you know, we have so much diversity in this community. Let's embrace that. Let's embrace that diversity of perspective, and let's get into those spaces as a unified Vallejo and celebrate all the different things that people have to offer.
I must say, so I have a 5-year-old and a 9, and I read books for them. One of the books said, it is so beautiful when everyone is diverse, because if everyone was the same, what a boring environment it would be. All of us eating the same food, wearing same clothes, it will be very weird, right?
Yeah.
What you said is so important. When you're diverse, yet you're bringing all that mentality, all that opinions together and putting it on the table, but making it productive and working together, that is beautiful.
It is. It's like grabbing their person idea, that person idea, and just brainstorming and putting it in one whole package.
And you come up with things you wouldn't have come up with individually. You know, if everybody just had the same echo chamber, the policies you come up with, the solutions you come up with are going to be very limited.
Right.
But if you start bringing in the different voices, that's where the work gets done.
That is true.
Yeah, because everybody has different struggles, different obstacles.
And we all don't think alike, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And I love that. One of your campaign promises was to commission a forensic audit of city finances. Can you share the progress of this initiative and any preliminary findings?
Yeah, this is one that has been, I've gotten a lot of questions about, and this has been slower than I would have liked. And so one of the first things that we did when the new four of us got seated is we went through the mid-year budget process. And as part of that process, we approved funding for performance auditing. And what performance auditing is it's, and I'll say this, I'm very fortunate to have a colleague on city council, Councilmember Tanya Letizou, who has been an auditor and has deep experiences in the area. And one of her recommendations was that we do performance auditing, which is basically, it's not just the fiscal audit. And it's not just the forensic piece that where you can identify potential fraud and mismanagement, but it's actually looking at the structure and the functionality of the organization and making recommendations to improve. So you would do that at a department level. You would go, okay, let's look at our public works department, let's say, and we're going to do the performance audit of our public works department and look at what their goals are, what their organizational structure is, how the money's getting spent, and is it the best way to achieve those aims. Now, the issue with that style of audit and with any audit is it does take a lot of time to implement because you have to turn over all those records. It takes a lot of staff time to turn over all the information, and so you have to do it kind of piecemeal over time. And you know, again, when I was running for office, I was hoping that we could do this and then get a sense of our finances and inform the budget. What's actually probably going to happen is we're going to have to select the most important departments to start with and then start to kind of adjust the organizational structure and financial practices from there. So it's going. I think I'm really happy with the plan. I wish we could do it a bit faster.
For someone that's not in government sector, what are the departments? How many is there?
Yeah, there are, I want to say there are 12. One of the first meetings we had at the beginning of the year was the overview of all the city departments. And not every city has the exact same functions. So some cities have their own fire departments. Some cities have parks and rec. So Vallejo doesn't have parks and rec. We have Greater Vallejo Recreation District. We also don't have the library within our city, right? That's with the Library Foundation and the county. But we do have our fire department, and we provide our own water, which is a big one. So we have.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Our water department, police and fire are big ones. Public works are the ones that do all the road, kind of road crew. We have our planning department that decides and helps with, you know, building permits and things like that, land use, our economic development department that supports businesses. And then you've got all your kind of usual things that you would have in any organization like HR, IT, et cetera. I'm sure I missed some, but that's kind of a sense of the range that we have.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
How are you ensuring transparency and accountability in Vallejo's budgeting process?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Well, I'll be accountable right now. I think we put some really good things in place at the beginning of the year when I had a conversation with the city manager and I said, look, we've got to have more lead time with the budget. So the budget has to be approved by June 30th of every year. That's a rule. And the budget has to have two readings. So you have to do one reading and say your intent to approve, and then you have to do a secondary reading and approve it. So we have two meetings a month. If you introduce the budget in June, that's one meeting, two meetings, you're done. You can't make any changes. The city staff prepare the budget, they bring it to city council. City council says, well, we'd love to see these changes, but you've now run out of time. And there's no time for really community input or engagement or anything like that. So the system that we came up with was we were gonna have budget workshops. And we had a workshop in March and we had a workshop in April. And we did them in the Vallejo room, which is on the lower level of the library, instead of in the city council chambers, because it just feels a little more inclusive. You don't have council sitting up above everybody else on the dais and the community down below in the chairs. You have everybody kind of at tables on the same level. And we broke into groups and we had chart paper and walked around and, you know, got a sense of priorities. We did another workshop on public safety as well. And then we did those workshops. And the idea was that that would inform staff in preparing the budget. And that budget would come back in May, so a little bit earlier. We didn't get it. The staff didn't get it done in time. They needed extra time. It just got delayed another week. So the first hearing is going to be June 10th. So it's a bit of a mixed bag here for me. And on one hand, I'm very happy that we had those workshops. And I think we've set some good procedures up for the future. But I'm not happy with the first hearing being June 10th. And I want to make sure that we put systems in place so that does not happen next year. Hopefully, we'll have more lead time. You know, taking office in January and trying to accelerate this process is different from starting now and thinking about next year's process and going, okay, how do we make sure we get this done sooner?
You're planning ahead to make sure that exactly. doesn't happen. Yeah.
So we put, you know, a couple things in place, and then there were just some more delays. I think there's just a, you know, it takes time to change things, and the city of Vallejo is used to just putting the budget forward to council in June and getting a rubber stamp on it without any meaningful discussion. And so we're moving that direction again. But we did have those two workshops. I think we'll hopefully have a budget that better reflects our priorities than maybe where we started last time. But there's still some work to do.
That's wonderful. As we talk about public safety is a pressing concern in Vallejo. What steps are you taking about the shortages in police department and rebuilding community trust?
Yeah, this is a huge one. This is probably the top priority for the city council, something we really set as a priority from day one. We had a workshop in early February after some high-profile shootings in January.
I did read that actually on your page, and I like how you're transparent, because sometimes you think people are putting it under the rug and saying it didn't happen.
Yeah, and that's, I think, getting back to the culture piece, we want to just be open and honest about what's going on and what we're going to do to address it, really showing that leadership. So it's hard. We've got an understaffed police department, and we have a police department that has, you know, a troubled history and lacks trust in the community. And so you have part of the community that just doesn't trust the police because of the history and is going to need to see reform and community building. And then you got that same part of the community and other parts of the community that don't trust the police department because there's not response. You know, they feel like they call 911 and they're not going to get a police response. And those issues are real. So I always see it as we have to do those two things at the same time. We have to staff up the department, and we also have to do the reform in the community work. So one of the things that this council is trying to do is we have been looking at expediting a contract with the Solano County Sheriff to supplement public safety. This is something that they've been talking about for about a year and a half, and that an entire piece of legislation got through the state legislature to help this program. But when we took office in January, it had been just basically shelved. I mean, it was just sitting, gathering dust. And so Supervisor James and a couple of the new council members and I went and met with the sheriff, and we tried to get it going. We've got a really firm deadline, though, and it's a very difficult agreement to try to get through. So we're hoping that we can get some supplementary help from the sheriff. If we can't do it through this agreement, we'll try to, you know, come up with maybe another arrangement. We're also trying to get some support from CHP. So shortly after I took office, we got an agreement from the governor's office that CHP was going to help with sideshow deterrence. And it was going to do it multiple times a month. And, you know, they're not going to say what day, obviously. And we have seen the number of sideshows dramatically decrease. I'm hoping that that will stay in place over the summer. It's, you know, the number of sideshows usually increases in the summer, but I think we're in a good place now because of that. And then the CHP has also been trying to help when they can, getting off the freeways. You know, we're trying to get them on Sonoma Boulevard since that's a state highway, and they have been coming off the freeways and kind of being in community more. I've seen them on the streets, and I think community members have as well. So we've got the sheriff and the CHP, and then we're really trying to press VPD, you know, to make sure we're implementing reforms, that we're doing things that are going to attract good officers and retain them, and that we can staff up in a sustainable way, because it's not fair to the community. We're owed a certain level of public safety. I think there's a certain expectation that the community should have. And so those of us that took office in January, we're really taking this seriously and prioritizing it.
I love it. That's transformation of a place. We talked about understaffed police officers. This is a question that I have. Why is there understaffed? Mm-hmm. Is it because the budgeting, or what is the reason?
It's not the budget at all. So we've actually had, I think, $60 million almost budgeted for the Vallejo Police Department for a couple years, and have not spent all of it. And it's been unclear, you know, if we're budgeted for 130 officers and we only have 70, one of the questions I always asked was, well, where is that rest of that money going? Well, it turns out the rest of that money was going to balancing the budget. They were using that salary savings to plug holes in other areas. Oh. And that was one of the things that I didn't mention when you asked about the transparency in the budgeting process. I mean, we did do a lot of work in providing transparency in how Vallejo was balancing its budget off salary savings, and where the money was actually going, and how much money actually got spent on police relative to what was budgeted.
Yeah, that's kind of, isn't that mismanagement?
I think it is. And there, you know, from a finance perspective, you can balance your budget on a little bit of salary savings. If you know, there's always turnover. It takes a minute to hire someone if someone leaves. If you allocate 2 or 3% here or there of like, yeah, we know we're going to have some vacancies, it's okay, the budget will be balanced. But Vallejo was doing it upwards of 8%. So we're saying, oh, we know we're going to have an 8% vacancy rate, so we're going to balance our budget off of this. That's not a balanced budget. And if at the same time you're saying, well, we're understaffed, we can't get the work done, you're saying, well, we're understaffed, but if we were to staff up, we would not have the budget because we're balancing our budget off of the savings from the fact that that position is vacant. And that's something that when we did those budget workshops, we really had to work through. And it takes a minute because the city's been so used to just saying, we have a structurally balanced budget, we have a structure. We didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't. But it was this culture of, let's just say everything's fine. And we pushed. This city council pushed and we said, no, let's be honest. This is what we've been doing. This is what the implications are. This is what's going to take to actually balance our budget. And we're going to have a balanced budget this year. Is it going to be sustainable? Maybe not fully, but by next year, it'll be sustainable. We're going to have to cut positions. Fundamentally.
Yeah. And listeners, just letting you know, Mayor Source is economics teacher, professor, yeah. Actually. So we're in good hands. I mean, economics, oh God, I'm just like I told you, that class, I could barely understand anything. And you're the professor for that. So you know numbers real well.
Yeah, this is one that with a master's degree in public administration and teaching economics with a policy lens, this is one that I wanted to take really seriously because I have been saying for years, this is not a structurally balanced budget. Let's not confuse ourselves.
No, I mean, you know? What you're telling me how budget, there is a certain budget category for police and now they're using that for something
yep.
else. It just doesn't make sense. It's like for
right.
your household, you have these categories and then you use that for... I think it should
yeah.
go for savings and then use it for something, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's really untransparent, fundamentally.
Yes.
I think that was one of the issues is, okay, we're not going into the red technically. You know, we're not spending beyond our means, but we're not being fully honest and transparent about what we can afford. And we're promising the citizens a level of staffing and service that is not something we can afford, and then making excuses, again, getting back to the culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Making excuses of, well, we can't do this because we're not staffed. Well, we have to figure out how to do more with less, and we need to be more honest about where the money's going. And that gets back to the police department, where we did have money. We did and we didn't. But, you know, we were not spending the entire police budget. I personally believe that the issue of the reputation of the department and the lack of accountability for misconduct and the lack of real meaningful efforts to rebuild trust in the community makes it difficult for officers to want to work here and stay here. And then it just exacerbates, right? It's exacerbated by if you're understaffed, you have officers, good officers, that are going from call to call to call to call. They don't get a break. They're seeing the absolute worst of human behavior. They're getting vicarious trauma and the community doesn't trust them. So they're having negative interactions with the community, even if they're a truly good officer, you know, practicing good policing. And they do that repeatedly, 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 overtime, no break, they're gonna burn out. So you get into this spiral. And of course, police staffing post 2020 and George Floyd, especially, police recruitment has been an issue. We're having to reimagine the entire profession and attract people into the profession. But I think what Vallejo is experiencing is not that. It's something beyond that.
Well, thank God you're here now, Yules.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. And then we also talk about how do you tackle issues like human trafficking and gun violence? You said a little bit by trying to have more police
yeah.
presence and CHP and sheriff. Is there anything else you're doing?
Yeah, so one of the things that I ran on was putting together an interagency task force because I think the issues of trafficking, especially whether it's arms trafficking or drug trafficking or human trafficking, they're regional. They're not limited to any one city, and often they're interstate. So you really do need the FBI involved, you need the state law enforcement involved, you need a regional approach with different local PDs. And we were very fortunate that Vallejo was selected to participate in the Federal Public Safety Partnership Program, which only, I think, about 4 cities nationally get selected in, and that just started this year. So we've got the FBI, ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and the district attorney, the U.S. attorney for our district, are a part of a partnership now with the Vallejo Police Department, and they are assisting with targeted enforcements, basically, on drugs and arm trafficking. And we had the first action back in, I think, February it was, at the Super 8 and then at a daycare, where they recovered a bunch of fentanyl pills and firearms. And I think that's a great start. You get in the CHP support as well. And then my next step, I think, that I really want to pursue is trying to get into regional conversations with Oakland especially, but also Richmond up to Sacramento, because the I-80 corridor is one of the most frequent for trafficking. It has one of the highest rates of especially human trafficking. And you look at the issues Oakland's facing, and you look at some of the crime issues we face with shootings and other violence, and it's often people from other cities. It's everybody kind of getting kind of mixed up in each other's business. And so if we can come up with collaborative relationships with Oakland and Richmond and other cities, now we can tackle it together, and we can bring in those state and federal partners as well.
Well said.
Well said, yeah. What strategies are you implementing to promote inclusive economic development and support small businesses in Vallejo?
This one, you know.
This one's fun to listen to.
Yeah, this is one, I think, with my economics professor hat on, is something I was really eager to do because Vallejo has, we always hear the word potential. And I'm sick of hearing the word potential, but it's all there for us. You know, we have the waterfront, we have the fairgrounds, we have all of these spaces that could be activated. And for whatever reason, since the naval base closed and then the bankruptcy, Vallejo has just never managed to really get a good activation of any of these spaces. But the assets are there for us. And the key for me is making sure that we are open for business, that we're ready to be a partner with our developers and our private sector entities that come in, but we're also not going to get taken advantage of. You know, we're not going to sign on. You know, Vallejo's had a history of making some bad deals where the city has given away land, but they haven't required that developers invest in that land. And so it allows them to just get the land, they can let it appreciate, make a bunch of money, sell it. And what we need to do is we need to bring developers in that actually really want to do the investment and build and create housing and generate economic activity. And we can all benefit. You know, they can profit, we can prosper, but we have to stand up for ourselves in those negotiations. And that was something that I was really adamant about during the campaign, that we needed to just make good deals. So from my perspective, you know, I would love to get the fairgrounds conversations back going with, in partnership with Supervisor James. I'm working with Mare Island Company to try to unlock some of the projects that have stagnated out there and having conversations with the stakeholders out there. And then obviously trying to make sure from a public safety standpoint that our small businesses can operate and that they get some support. This is one area I think where I, you know, now I'm 5 months in, I've had to do some prioritization, and the public safety stuff has been so urgent. And I think that does help our business community. But one of the things that I'm hoping to do this summer is some outreach to small businesses. Yeah, you know, in the spring, I was really focused on meeting with different stakeholder groups, went out to community meetings. I went and met with some high school seniors before they graduated. That was a priority of mine, to go out to high schools and speak with youth. And you can't do everything. And so one of the things that I haven't had a chance to do is really go out and do proper outreach to the business community. And so that's something that's on my list for sort of next steps, is figure out, okay, as we try to get.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Get these big projects going where we can really build housing. That's how you create a sustainable, prosperous community, is you make sure that your projects have housing to house people, jobs that pay living wages, you know, so people that grow up here can live here. As we do all that medium and long-term stuff, what are we doing to support folks now?
I want to, just like you, or talk about transparency. I've always been in my podcast very transparent with how I feel. So when I interviewed Miss Cassandra James, all this time I've never come to the ferry, just you know. So 2 months ago, we brought our children and their school friends to the ferry. What a beautiful place. And I was actually driving with my husband. I said, I cannot believe all this time I have missed out on this view and the experience.
Yeah.
The one thing that I will say, as someone that comes visits here, what deterred me was also the homelessness.
Yeah.
Right by there, we park our car. I get it. All the cities have it. But there was a lot of homeless camp. They were there. How are you tackling that? Because as someone that's coming like me, I just love, enjoy that, and I want to bring my kids all summer. But at one point, I'm also scared, you know, if I come with my kids without my husband, you know, as a woman, I feel like I come later from San Francisco. How can I do that? And that deters me coming, and that is, I want to spend my money here.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is such a huge issue, and I think in general, I want to see us activate that area around the ferry, and I want to see us activate those two blocks between the ferry and downtown. To me, that's a huge loss that you have all these ferry riders. It's this incredible, beautiful area, this great economic engine, and we have this gap where we have the ferry terminal. We just kind of have two empty blocks, and then our downtown starts, and that's something just from an economic development standpoint I'm looking for. The homelessness situation is, it's absolutely tragic. Mm-hmm. And I've been, you know, we were talking earlier about the ACLU chapter. One of the areas they work on is, you know, making sure that we're not criminalizing homelessness and criminalizing poverty, and advocating for policies that support people and give them an opportunity to get back on their feet. And so I've always been of the opinion that the way to address a crisis like this is to make sure that you can give people options. Because it's one of the things that I found during the campaign, and even before the campaign when I was doing community work, is that the concerns that you hear are the same concerns. So what you're expressing, you know, not feeling safe, even just the blight, the optics, the trash, the smell, whatever it may be, around an encampment, if you talk to the unhoused residents themselves in that encampment, they're going to say the same thing. They're going to say, we don't feel safe. We're experiencing arson. We're experiencing crime. The sanitation, it's a public health crisis. And what the city of Vallejo has never done is actually done a real needs assessment of the population and figured out what they need, what percentage of our folks that are living outside, if given just a bit of support or an option, would be able to get into housing, and what percent then would need more kind of intense support and intense support services. We haven't done that, and what the city has always done instead is just sweep. And my opinion, which differs from the opinion of the Vallejo City Council, is that you cannot displace people without them having somewhere to go, because they'll just go somewhere else. And so I think what has happened with the downtown encampment in Vallejo, I've been working with people at that encampment for a few years now, and in the past it was maybe 7 people, and now it's probably 50. And the reason is because the city has been sweeping people from other places. They've been sweeping under the library, under some of the overpasses, and other parts of Vallejo. They removed a bunch of people from River Park, and you've got now this massive encampment downtown, and they're trying to clear it. The city council, the policy of the Vallejo City Council in the city is to sweep encampments. And so they're trying to sweep the downtown, but folks don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And that puts us in a really difficult position, because you, personally, I don't think that's going to solve anything. It's going to create maybe some temporary relief for some people, but you're not going to really address the root of the problem. And, you know, the same thing with RVs. You look at RVs that were at River Park. The city cleared a bunch of RVs near the flood and wastewater treatment plant on Ryder Street. Folks went up to Lincoln Road, cleared the RVs from there, went down to Durr Street, and it's the same people a lot of the times, each time. And you talk to them, and it's a veteran, it's a person with a disability, it's a person with a job, it's a person with kids, and they go, just tell me where I can go. Just tell me where I can go, and I'll go there. Like, I don't,
really,
you know,
sad.
They don't want this, but the city hasn't provided them anywhere to go. So it's a difficult position, and there's a lot of just vitriol and misinformation on the issue. It's a really difficult issue, but having now just campaigned citywide, we knocked 13,000 doors during the campaign. This is a compassionate city. You know, Vallejoans want clean and safe public spaces. We have to clear that area by the ferry terminal. It's not safe for anybody, including the unhoused residents. And it's not a good look for the city. There are better ways to do it. You know, even just putting a dumpster or a porta potty eliminates a lot of the issues. But, you know, we're a compassionate city. The majority of people that I've talked to want a humane response. They want us to provide at least an option for folks to have some type of service.
I was going to say, what are the options for the homeless?
Well, and this is the other problem, is that the city in the past has mismanaged a lot of funding and housing projects, where we're now opening projects that were greenlit, you know, 5, even 10 years ago, and we don't even know if they meet the needs of our unhoused. And that, to me, is just, you know, you put the cart before the horse. and we're now $40 million in the hole. And we don't even know if these projects are going to meet our needs. So for me, it's doing the needs assessment. It's finding, you know, at least temporarily some safe camping or parking where you can go and say to somebody, look, if you want to really genuinely try to get back on your feet, here is somewhere where you can park where we're not going to tag your car. And you can be there and be safe, and we'll get you services. Here's a dumpster.
Yeah.
And let's try to get you into some housing. Same thing with tents. Okay, here's somewhere where you can sleep. You don't have to worry about getting displaced. We're going to bring you the services. You can be there for a certain number of months, and then we'll try to get you into housing. These are not supposed to be permanent solutions, right? Safe camping parking is not a permanent option. But it's basically saying, you know what? Maybe if we have you not living in fear constantly of getting swept.
So there are resources for them, right?
They're limited in Solano County. That's the other problem. And that's where, you know, Supervisor James is working really hard at the county level, and we're trying really hard at the city level to figure out what we need and how we can get more resources to the city. Their resources are very limited. But there have been studies, you know, there was a statewide study in the last couple of years that said on average $300 a month would get a good portion of folks off the street. We have folks on the street that are just a little boost away from having a security deposit for an apartment. And so how do you prevent the problem in the first place? Prevent the eviction, you know, right, and give people the renter protections. And then how do you make sure that once someone loses their housing, we can get them back on their feet? Because the longer somebody remains unhoused, the more likely they are to just become chronically unhoused.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's just a lot of policy levers, and it's unfortunate, you know, for, again, this new council, we're inheriting a problem where we just have not, I don't think, done the pre-work needed. And so we're having to balance the very real urgency of the issues, the urgency of, like, this downtown encampment, it's out of hand for everybody, the residents themselves. It, like I said, it's a public health and safety crisis for everybody that's involved. How do we balance the urgency of that with the need to actually step back and do the work that we should have done 5 years ago? Which is, you know, doing the research, getting the data, getting the needs, working with people.
I think from what I'm hearing from you is that right now all of you are trying to put the new foundation where mm-hmm. this all could work. But is there resistance to that? Because I know in cities where the new leadership comes mm-hmm. and they're trying to bring all this positive impact, but there is resistance from the population that they want the old ways.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of resistance. But like I said, I feel confident in having, again, spoken with thousands and thousands and thousands of Vallejoans during the campaign that where there's a general consensus that we want clean and safe public spaces and a humane response. I feel very, very secure in that position. There are people that are, you know, I don't think there's anybody that's happy with the status quo or the situation, but there are people that are just, they're so frustrated with the city's inaction and the lack of leadership and the lack of any real meaningful progress over the last few years that they just want to see the homeless just rounded up and pushed out of town. And so that's a group that we hear a lot from right now. And frankly, I understand the frustration. I share the frustration of the inaction. Where I disagree is I don't think you keep doing the same thing over and over again. I mean, all the city of Vallejo has ever done are these sweeps. So the solution is not more sweeps. The solution right. is we have to do something differently. Mm-hmm. The policy of the city of Vallejo, though, is sweeps. It always has been, and it continues to be sweeps. I just happen to be in the minority on the city council at the moment with respect to the sweeps. But right. yeah, there's a huge, huge vocal group that is, you know, justifiably very, very frustrated. And we held a special meeting in late March and early April where, you know, we had to kind of let out a pressure cooker a little bit because you have so many people that have such strong opinions and frustrations that feel like they've never been heard. And I think you just have to get it out at a certain point. And so for the first time in many years, we just had a meeting where we had 3 hours of public comment where people just talked about homelessness on both, you know, all sides, you know, left, right, middle. And it's going to take a few more of those, I think, before we can really
do something,
get into spaces yeah. and have people in spaces where they can disagree. But like I said, I feel pretty secure in what I think is the heart of the city.
But which I think you guys are doing a pretty good job brainstorming, being the community. Yeah. They're voicing their opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's... Yeah. And if you go on to, you know, even Nextdoor or the Vallejo community pages, you know, Facebook groups, when people post needing support, when people post and say, I'm about to lose my apartment, or, you know, I'm unhoused, I need to get food, the number of people that respond trying to help, you know, the outpouring of support that you see is incredible.
How do you take the residents' input? Is there, like, they go on a website, they come to your meetings? How do you let them be part of the decision-making?
Yeah. So as of pre-us taking office, the real way to do it was you can email city council, or you can go to a city council meeting and you can make a public comment. The public comments are limited to 3 minutes. There's not a conversation. It's one way. That, to me, is not the best way to get public input, is to just have everybody talk limited to 3 minutes. And it's one way. So we've been exploring having things called study sessions and having workshops where we can have a city council meeting, but it's kind of a more inclusive format where the community can really participate. That's what we did on public safety and on the budget. And then we've got to be doing more things like town halls out in community and community meetings where we can have real dialogue. And for me thus far, it's been going to neighborhood meetings, neighborhood associations. We've had a couple of events at churches. We did a conversation with the NAACP, just finding other ways to be out in community where you can take Q&A and have more interaction is where I see it. So the council meetings are one way and emails are one way. I'll also say that, you know, especially as mayor, being citywide with 125,000 people, the number of emails that I get, I realized within about 2 weeks of taking office that I was not going to be able to respond to every email. As much as I would love to respond to every constituent that reaches out, I would have no time to do anything else if I just did that. So I am actively trying to brainstorm, okay, what does this look like? What does my responsiveness to this look like? If I don't physically have time to respond to everybody individually, where do I create spaces where people know they can be heard and they don't feel like they have to come to these city council meetings on a Tuesday evening and speak for 3 minutes? They can have their voice heard in all of these other different spaces as well.
That's great. Before we wrap up, I have one last question. What messages would you like to share with the residents of Vallejo, especially mothers and families, about your commitment to the city's well-being?
Yeah, I think there's so much to say here. I think the first thing, and I spoke to a reporter about this after we hit the first 100 days in office, and I said, you know, when you think about all the things we've accomplished so far, the newly elected officials, it's a lot. We've been really hard at work, and I want to recognize that, but I also don't want to downplay the magnitude of the issues we face. We are still facing some really serious issues. We have a lot of work to do. The city is not functioning at a level that I deem acceptable for our community. And so I'm taking this really seriously. I'm dug in. I'm doing the work. We are getting there. And I think it's important for us to hold both of those at the same time, to say, look at everything we've done. Look at the progress we've made. You could see it with, you know, with CHP, with the sheriff, you know, with the public safety partnership, stuff on homelessness. Look at all the progress we've made, but also look at all the work we still have to do. And then we also need to find ways to celebrate the joy, and celebrate the joy in a way that doesn't diminish the real issues and concerns, but to, you know, we rode the bus with La Russell to celebrate the Youth Ride Free program. And, you know, Vallejo's own CC Sabathia is going to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And we have all these other community and grassroots organizations doing amazing work. And we've got to find ways to get that joy and get control our own city's narrative, rather than just be the butt of every scandal and the regional media and always be in the media for negative stuff. We've got to get control of our own story and be the leaders of our own narrative. And then specifically to mothers and families, you know, I think when I think about engagement, when I think about building power and creating a government that's more inclusive, I think mothers and families are one of the groups that tend to get left out. Just because you're juggling so many commitments, the schedule's not as flexible. I mean, what person with young kids can be at a city council meeting at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday? You know, so we have to create more spaces for engagement, because folks care. I saw it when I knocked doors. Folks care. They're huge in central Vallejo especially. There are so many young people, you know, people in their 30s and 40s that are, maybe they're renting, maybe they're new homeowners, they have young kids, their kids are in Vallejo schools, they want to be part of the positive change, and they're trying to just figure that out. And we need to create spaces that are not come to the city council meeting until midnight, because that's not going to work. And so how is it that we find those family-friendly spaces and events? Mm-hmm. And I think Supervisor James is a great, you know, resource as a mom herself. But we're looking at, you know, First Five with the county. We're looking with the school district to partner. And just, you know, we had an amazing event last week. The school district put on an event all in Spanish for families. Just things like that where you can have that interaction in a way that is inclusive of everybody.
That's really good.
And can bring folks in.
That's really great. Good. Yeah.
It's amazing. And we would like to thank you for giving us all
of
this
course.
Information. And we are excited to share all these resources with our listeners. Thank you for all that you're doing. And just like before the podcast, we said, POCM is from Tomorrow's Table
Podcast.
Are you?
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
from Solano Moms. We're here to be your partner and help you in whatever way you would like.
Thank you so much. Yeah, let's do it again for sure. We can do an update
in a few months
later this year.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I'll really come 2 hours it. Early this time.
Hey, if you get
too
here,
early, Miriam.
If you get here early, come on in. We got coffee and snacks. So
thank you, Mayor Source.
Thank you, listeners. Goodbye.
Goodbye
next
for
time.
Now.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.